Welcome, everyone, to the Divided Kingdom. Here it is, as I record the program, Tuesday. And what is the date? June 9th, 2026. So you're listening to the Divided Kingdom. I'm Luke Harrelly. And this is a Christian-oriented program, but we try and cover a lot of the news items that you may not hear in the mainstream, either because they just didn't get to them or because they don't want to talk about them. And this one they have to talk about. I was listening to a few of the things on Fox News as I was driving. I get the Sirius XM in my car radio. This is about the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is in deep doo-doo right now because of claims that they had been doing some shady things. So this is dated June 8th, which would have been yesterday as I record the program. The Southern Poverty Law Center's long-running scam is getting even shadier. And this was by David Harsanyi. Many of you may have heard him at other times or read about things he's written. This was appearing in the New York Post, as I said, June 8th. It turns out the most generous funder of white supremacist groups in the United States was likely the Southern Poverty Law Center. At least that's what the Justice Department's superseding indictment against the SPLC alleges. The organization secretly paid informants to engage in actively promoting and funding racist groups while denouncing and fighting the very same groups in public. The SPLC reportedly created fictitious entities to hide funding from their donors. Well, let me interject here. This is Lou speaking. A long time ago, I thought the Southern Poverty Law Center was a pretty good organization. Maybe it was in those days. We're talking good 40, 50 years ago. Well, and my late wife Elizabeth thought so too. She might have even given us some financial support in her single days before we got married. But now this reminds me so very much is the guy who sets a fire, but he's on the fire department because he wants to have the action, or maybe because he wants to justify his own existence, which is something like what I read into the lines here. But it's not just that. Let me read on. It's accused, for instance, of bankrolling, that is, the Southern Poverty Law Center is bankrolling the 2017 Unite the Right rally, paying a leader nearly $300,000 to post racist messages, organize, and even transport people to the infamous Charlottesville protest, where one person was killed. In another instance, a pair of white supremacists who approached the SPLC about leaving the Ku Klux Klan were encouraged to stay in the group and recruit new members. The two men were given salaries and allegedly reimbursed for the cost of their activities, including those, quote, incurred for cross-burning events to include the wood and fuel used, unquote. In the end, I'm not sure what legal jeopardy there is in engaging in this brand of duplicitous activity. But it is, without a doubt, corrupt, fraudulent, immoral, and bad for the country. Many people correctly point out that the SPLC is merely interested in keeping white supremacist groups operational to justify its existence. After all, if they couldn't complain about these groups, now this is me, Lou speaking, if they didn't have these so-called right-wing groups to complain about, they wouldn't have any reason to exist. Going on now, white nationalists and identitarian groups have no genuine political power or support. So it makes sense that SPLC and others would prop them up for fundraising purposes. The notion that Americans live in a nation of deep-seated systemic and cultural racism is a foundational belief of the American left. Having a bunch of cartoonishly racist groups running around the country not only perpetrates I should say, perpetuates the myth that helps raise money. But a far more vital objective of the SPLC is destroying the reputations of legitimate organizations that have absolutely nothing to do with racism or extremism. The purpose of these so-called hate maps and enemies lists compiled by SPLC isn't to alert Americans about local skinheads, but to associate those skinheads with conservative groups, like the American College of Pediatricians, the Family Research Council, Turning Point USA, the American Family Association, and Moms for Liberty. In 2016, for instance, the SPLC, quote, hate and extremism, unquote, list, added Alliance Defending Freedom, a highly effective legal organization that won multiple religious freedom cases before the Supreme Court. It often represents minority clients. Now, that talking about the Alliance Defending Freedom often represents minority clients. Its most high-profile case involved Jack Phillips, a persecuted cake maker from Colorado, whose First Amendment rights were stripped by the state government. But the group also takes on, and again they're talking about the Alliance Defending Freedom, also takes on cases regarding state funding for abortion or biological males competing in girls' sports. You may disagree with ADF's position on those issues, but only an extremist progressive actually considers it a hate group worthy of inclusion on a list with, quote, neo-Confederates, unquote. It's not the pinhead neo-Volkish that concerns the SPLC. It's the impressive lawyer with the Alliance Defending Freedom. Yet the SPLC's hate list has been treated as an authoritative source on extremism by virtually every legacy media outlet for years. During the height of the Black Lives Matter protests and riots, the New York Times cited the SPLC as an unimpeachable authority on hate groups and hundreds of stories over a one-year span. The paper cited the group thousands of times over the previous decade. That's just a single media organization. From the mid-2010s through 2025, when the SPLC was spending millions to prop up the worst right-wing extremists in the country, virtually any story about rising extremism on NBC News featured the SPLC. The question is, how can any reputable media outlet, much less a government agency, ever use the SPLC as a source again? They'll try. Even now, outlets like the Associated Press refer to the SPLC as a civil rights group. The SPLC, formed in 1971 by civil rights activists in Montgomery, Alabama, hasn't been fighting for the rights of African Americans for a long time. The KKK was already on its last legs in the early 1970s. The FBI estimated fewer than 2,000 active Klansmen operating in the entire country at that point. By the mid-1980s, the SPLC shifted away from a focus on civil rights to rooting out right-wing extremism. That's in quotes, right-wing extremism. In 1986, its entire legal staff, except for founder Morris Dees, who was pushed out of the organization in 2019 after allegations of sexual harassment and racial discrimination, quit over the change. Let me read that again without that parenthetical phrase. It makes more sense. In 1986, its entire legal staff quit over the change. The SPLC, probably superfluous when it was formed, has long been a shady left-wing activist group with a near $1 billion endowment. That's billion with a B. The Justice Department's new indictment further confirms it was worse than we thought. And if you want to get a copy of that, you can go to the New York Post and just do a little search for Southern Poverty Law Center. disappeared June 8th, and was by David Arsenyi. Now, you might remember an attack on a church where a bunch of activists entered the church in Minnesota and started screaming, scaring the little kids. Here's an article from the Washington Times, Sunday, June 7th, 2026, by Robert Knight. What's a little mob attack on a church service? If you are a left-wing activist living in St. Paul, Minnesota, you now have official state status, that is, sanction, to invade a church, scream at parishioners, terrify children, and harass people on their way out of worship services. All that happened at City's Church on January 18th when a mob invaded the Southern Baptist Church during a protest against its pastor, Jonathan Parnell, who is also an official with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Protesters reduced children to tears by screaming at them, "Do you know your parents are Nazis? They are going to burn in hell." Others accused the parishioners of being rich and white. On Wednesday, because none of the 39 people arrested had committed physical violence or vandalism, St. Paul City Attorney Irene Kao dismissed all state charges. As Kao said, quote, "This decision should not be interpreted as an endorsement of unlawful behavior or public disorder. The right to peacefully protest is protected, as is the right to exercise one's religious beliefs. Balancing these equally important rights is paramount to our decision today," unquote. What part of shutting down a worship service and harassing worshipers constitutes balancing? Letting the mob get away with it? Mr. Parnell, and again he was the pastor, wrote in an op-ed in which he offered an olive branch to the protesters. He said they had stormed into the house of God, a place of peace and refuge, and they defiled it with rage. But he also said, writing, that the love of Jesus, quote, "is a joy that opens wide its arms to our cities, even to those who raise their fists against us," unquote. Although the defendants still face charges brought by a federal grand jury, the city's attorney's dismissal of the cases sends a loud signal to heavily subsidized and coordinated left-wing protest networks. Don't worry, we've got your back, especially here in one of the most progressive sanctuary cities in the nation, unquote. Excuse me. The church was invaded after days of protests against ICE roundups by thousands of illegal alien criminals in Minneapolis, during which two ICE or anti-ICE activists were killed. One of those in the city's church mob in St. Paul was former CNN news anchor Don Lemon, or I sometimes heard it said Lamar, but I think now he calls himself Lemon, who had conferred with the activists and given them donuts before the church invasion. Although he insisted he was merely a journalist live streaming the protest, Mr. Lemon was arrested on charges of violating state and federal civil rights laws. The federal charges include, quote, acts of oppression, intimidation, threats, interference, and physical obstruction, unquote. Still, the church invasion was apparently no big deal to Ms. Kao, a longtime progressive activist who spearheaded diversity, equity, and inclusion, that is DEI, policies at the Minnesota Bar Association. In practice, DEI means openly discrimination against whites, males, Christians, and conservatives, and increasingly against Jews. Catholic League President Bill Donahue, and remember, this was not a Catholic church in which this happened, but Catholic League President Bill Donahue wrote a letter Thursday to Ms. Kao asking why the church invasion did not constitute a First Amendment violation. He wrote, quote, If someone organized a group of protesters to take over your office, would you find that acceptable? There would be no violence, just in-your-face invective and intimidation. If this were to happen, you wouldn't have a leg to stand on, morally or legally. And Mr. Donahue also wrote a letter Thursday to Acting U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche, asking him to make the City Church case a priority, noting that he himself had attended a rally a week earlier to protest hatred against Jews in New York City. Mr. Donahue wrote, quote, "Today I am rallying to the side of our Protestant brothers in St. Paul who have been targeted by hate mongers. That people of faith cannot practice their religion without intimidation and interference. It means their First Amendment's rights to religious liberty mean nothing. Anti-Semitic incidents are increasing in places such as New York, London, Paris, and Sydney. Mosques are not immune either. In San Diego on May 18th, two radicalized teenagers, driven by white supremacist and Nazi ideologies, killed three people at an Islamic center. Evidence indicates the two shooters pretty much hate everyone, especially women and Jews, for which they blame even the rise of Islam." Well, there's a bit more to this, but we have to look at the clock, so I'm going to stop it there. But that's an interesting article that appeared in the Washington Times on Sunday, June 7th, entitled, "What's a Little Mob Attack on a Church Service?" And I would add that many churches now, because of shootings, both Protestant and Catholic, and, of course, Jewish synagogues as well, and in this case, even an Islamic center, they have to have guards at the doors now because there have been acts of violence. And this sort of permissiveness just encourages these kind of radicals who think nothing of screaming at people, interrupting a service, and what else would they do if they dared to do it? That's a good question. Well, now, you're listening to The Divided Kingdom. I'm Luke Haverly. If you'd like to write to me, my address is Lou, L-O-U, Haverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Didn't get that? I'll repeat it later in the program. Just have some writing materials handy. I'd love to hear what you think. We have a website. Now, unfortunately, I guess I have to say I have a website. My wife passed away, as many of you know, a little over a year ago. So I'm holding down the fort myself now. And this is a program that gives the news from a Christian perspective. But we try to be open-minded, and we certainly try not to discriminate against anyone, be they Christian, Jew, Protestant, Catholic, Muslim, or atheist, for that matter. Now, I will say this. Many of you have gone to the website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and I've had a strange thing happen this weekend. I went to it to check out the archives that I've often talked about, where you can listen to past programs. Well, the archives were there, but all the programs had disappeared. So I contacted the very fine lady named Angel, who does our website. She's been a godsend to this program for many years. And strangely enough, she was able to get to all the programs as usual. Well, yesterday, Monday, I went to the library, and I thought to myself, if she can get it, let me try it on the library's computers. And lo and behold, it worked just fine. The archives came right up, nice as anything. Now, I believe I use Microsoft Edge, and I think the other browser was Firefox. I always get it mixed up if it's Foxfire or Firefox. Many of you who are far more expert than I am would know which one it is. But it worked fine in both of those. So maybe it's because I'm using my little cell phone and it doesn't have enough memory. I'm just not expert enough. But if you have been in the habit of going to the archives, don't despair, but you may have to change the browser. Or maybe they're working fine for you. If so, that's great. If you want to hear the program live, it appears on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio. You can go to WWCR.com Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You know, you can listen on a shortwave radio if you have one of those on a frequency of 4.840 megahertz. That's 4.840. Many of you may be listening to it right now on that very frequency. But you can also do it on the computer if you have the internet. And again, it's WWCR.com. They have several transmitters. You can check that program listings to find out which one is currently running our program. And then the very same program is repeated Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, but the frequency is different if you use shortwave. Again, you can go to their website, WWCR.com, or you can listen on 7.490, 8 a.m. Saturday mornings. There are other ways to listen. And if you go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, it gives you a list of all the different ways. There are a couple of the programs that WWCI was kind enough to give us a free play. We didn't have to pay for that, just like you don't have to pay for Saturday morning. But they had some paying customers that had to take those. So I'm not sure whether the website is totally up to date. But the Thursday night and Saturday morning are still running. Well, now we're going to change the subject. The last week or two, we've been talking about some teen takeovers. Here's a quick update. From Fox News, June 7th, that would have been Sunday, by Julia Bonavita. Cops halt planned teen takeover as officials brace for a summer surge in chaos and arrests, according to the police chief. A Florida police department is taking a victory lap after thwarting an unsanctioned teen takeover, marking the latest move from law enforcement working to combat the viral events sweeping the nation. Authorities with the St. Augustine Beach Police Department shut down an unsanctioned event scheduled for Thursday at a local pier after they used electronic monitoring to identify the plan before it dissolved into chaos. And these are the words of St. Augustine Beach Police Chief Daniel Carswell as he told it to Fox News Digital. He said, quote, "We're a beach town, so we've always had spring break crowds that show up. But nothing that's been organized like this, for the solemn town of just causing disruption. The gathering was initially scheduled for 2 p.m. Thursday." So that would have been last week, according to the event flyer shared by the department. The flyer reads, "Pull up, turn up, take over," with a large canceled banner plastered across the post on social media. According to Carswell, he's the police chief, the department is working alongside neighboring law enforcement agencies to leverage an electronic monitoring system designed to flag planned events before they take place. "We worked," and this is in quotes from Mr. Carswell, "we worked together great, especially with the St. Johns County Sheriff's Office. They have what's called a Real-Time Intelligence Center, or ARTIC for short, and that's their job," unquote. In the days leading up to Thursday's planned takeover, Carswell said ARTIC flagged the event to authorities, providing enough time to shut it down. And this again is Police Chief Carswell speaking. They search the internet. They're searching constantly for threats to our community and threats to the public. They came across this and sent it to us, which was fortunate for us because we had time to act. In the days leading up to the unsanctioned event, the St. Augustine Beach Police Department used social media to spread the word that the viral takeover had been canceled. And again, in the interest of time, let me skip down a little bit. Mr. Croswell said that they were a small police department with just 25 officers. So this kind of thing is a big drain on their resources. And he also says, and this is in quotes, "We don't know how many people would show up for this kind of thing. Could be tens, could be hundreds. We just don't know. And that is overwhelming to our resources. We have to call on people on the days off, or pull resources from other agencies." And they do mention in the article, on May 31st, Sunday, hundreds of teens descended on Clearwater Beach on the Sunshine State's west coast, prompting a massive police response and in a multiple people being detained, and a 17-year-old sustained non-life-threatening injuries after being shot during alleged altercation near Coronado Drive and Devon Drive. All right, I'm going to stop there. Again, our time is flying. But interesting article, and just one of many. I think there was something else. Yeah, in Palm Beach County, they are looking into another teen takeover plan for Friday. I guess they mean last Friday at the Wellington Green Mall, according to station WPBF. Officials reportedly became aware of its takeover, of the takeover, after a flyer was circulated on social media calling in local teens to, quote, "bring your crew, bring the energy, let's take over," unquote. So the authorities are monitoring the situation. Okay, so this is an ongoing thing. We've talked about it a couple weeks, and we'll probably have some more to talk about. A little different version, different place from the Gateway Pundit. And this, you can see a video if you go to their website, the Gateway Pundit. Violent teen takeover. Brawl shut down church fundraiser in Columbus, Ohio. 11 arrested for fighting, theft, and vandalism. Again, this was the Gateway Pundit by Jordan Conrison, June 7th, 2026. Nearly a dozen arrests were made on Friday during a fundraising festival for St. Catherine Catholic Church near the Columbus, Ohio suburb of Bexley, after a teen takeover event led to multiple fights. Columbus Mayor Andrew Ginther condemned the behavior in a statement saying, "Our neighborhood events should be welcoming places for residents and families to come together. This behavior is unacceptable," unquote. And Mayor Bexley also said, Bexley Mayor Ben Kessler said, quote, "a few businesses reported criminal mischief during the period," unquote. And two females got in a big fight. That always brings a big mob. As a former teacher, all it took would be a couple of females, or a couple of males, but especially the females, getting in a fight. And the first, you know, you get a few hundred kids gathering around to watch. Sometimes the teachers couldn't even get to the fight to break it up because of all the crowd. And that's what was happening here. One young black female said, quote, "as a teen, I am really embarrassed that you guys are out here acting like this." He continued, "we came out here to have fun. We can never do anything right. You guys always act up, and this is completely embarrassing," unquote. So you see, you've got some good kids. In fact, I would venture to guess, having been a teacher myself, the great majority of teenagers are pretty nice kids. But you got a few bad apples in any group, and that's all it takes. And the first thing you know, kids who don't mean to do any harm gathering around to watch. That's just human nature. And back to the article. Following the violent teen takeover, St. Catherine Catholic Church announced the cancellation of the event, expressing, quote, great disappointment in a Facebook post on Saturday. The church said, quote, it is with great disappointment that we announce the cancellation of the remainder of FunFest 2026. The safety and well-being of our parishioners and surrounding community must always remain our highest priority, unquote. And they apologize to any people in the neighborhood that were inconvenienced or disturbed. Okay. No one was seriously injured. That was the good news. According to the reports, and this is again reading from the article, the fighting started at 7 p.m. on Friday. Reports of gunshots were made. Police further received reports that teens robbed a nearby CVS pharmacy and vandalized a watermelon box at a local grocery store. At least 11 were arrested, including arrests for theft and vandalism. And it gives a description of where it took place, but I won't read all that. That wouldn't make too much impression on most of us. Let's see. Anything else I should read here? Let's see. The vandalism took place at a watermelon box at a Giant Eagle on Main Street in Bexley. So they had those Giant Eagle grocery stores up in that part of Ohio as well. I'm familiar with those from my wife Elizabeth's home up in West Central Pennsylvania. And you wonder why it's not possible to stop these things faster unless you have advanced knowledge. It says, Kessler said there was an estimated 500 to 800 teenagers at the event, most of whom were peaceful. Both Bexley and Columbus police responded, as St. Catherine sits right over the Bexley border into Columbus. And Kessler said there were over 100 police cruisers and officers on scene to help with crowd control. All right. And I suppose these kind of things are going to continue throughout the summer. We'll bring a little summary from time to time. All right, now we're going to shift gears. That, by the way, was from the Gateway Pundit, dated June 7th. And that would have been on Sunday, this past Sunday. Now, a few years back, all kinds of statues were being pulled down, hidden away. I'm sure if you watch TV at all, you remember all about that. Now, here's an article from the Wall Street Journal about repercussions lately. This is by Cameron McWhorter, June 3rd. U.S. cities dust off statues they hid away in 2020. Got a lot about Columbus, Ohio this week. This one is Dateline Columbus, Ohio. The statue wars that swept away monuments 6 years ago are back. This time, the battle is to restore them. Traditionalists are suing and lobbying local governments to resurrect memorials to Confederate generals, founding fathers, and European explorers. Many of these statues disappeared from town squares and other public places during the pandemic-era protests against police violence and racism following George Floyd's murder in 2020. Ohio's capital, named, of course, for Christopher Columbus, took down a 22-foot high, 3-ton statue of its namesake from City Hall that year. Officials declared the 1955 gift from sister city Genoa, Italy, had come to represent, quote, patriarchy, oppression, and divisiveness, unquote. And then Mayor Andrew Ginther, a Democrat, said at the time, well, we will no longer live in the statue. Make that the shadow of our ugly past, unquote. Columbus's detractors, that is the man Columbus's detractors, tied the Italian explorer to the brutal subjugation of native civilizations in the Americas. His supporters say Columbus should be lauded for his discoveries, not blamed for what followed. The city's Columbus statue for now lies on its back inside a fenced storage facility, monitored by security cameras and adorned from head to toe with a strand of yellow caution tape. In April, a coalition of Italian-American groups filed a federal lawsuit claiming the statue's removal was illegal and demanding its return. Jack Conti, a 67-year-old, the lawsuit's organizer, said, quote, "The silent majority is becoming vocal. You reach a point where this stuff is shoved down your throat and you can only take so much of it," unquote. And the Trump administration is helping lead the charge ahead of the nation's 250th anniversary next month. In March, the administration erected a Columbus statue near the White House, a replica of one that protesters sank in Baltimore's Inner Harbor in 2020. The replica was donated by the Conference of Presidents of Major Italian-American Organizations. The group's president, Basil Russo, a former Democratic politician from Cleveland, said Columbus, that is the man Columbus, had become a scapegoat for Western colonization. In a thank you letter to Russo, Trump lauded Columbus as, quote, "the original American hero and one of the most gallant and visionary men to ever walk the face of the earth," unquote. Russo himself can't believe Columbus, that is the city Columbus, took down his statue. He said, "It's the name of that city. What sense does that make?" Unquote. Now, let me skip down again in the interest of time. I have enough things today. I could do two or three shows if my voice would only hold out. In December, a stone highway marker honoring Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general, suddenly appeared in Marion Square, planted alongside a major thoroughfare in a hub of picnics, farmers markets, and celebrations in Charleston, South Carolina. At a subsequent meeting of the city's commission on history, Dale Thiele, one of the commissioners, explained that Charleston had agreed to release the monument to the United Daughters of the Confederacy. The group dropped a lawsuit against the city that it had filed after the statue was pulled from a public school in 2021 and put in storage. Police return to public view was aided by a locale. Marion Square is owned by a private organization, the Board of Field Officers of the 4th Brigade of the South Carolina Militia, which got the land from the city in 1833. Okay. Again, our time is flying. Let me just read a little bit more, skipping down. And I should say this. I'm a Massachusetts boy. One of my, I think it was probably my great-great-grandfather's brother was killed as a Union soldier at the Second Battle of Bull Run, or as many Southern historians call it, the Second Manassas Battle. So, I guess I'm considered a Yankee for people down this way. Still have just a touch of a Boston accent. But I subscribe to the idea that these things are part of our history. And like that famous quote from Santayana says, and I've heard it in various versions, but basically it says, if you don't remember the past, you are condemned to repeat it. And a lot of the people that are doing away with the U.S. history, some for nefarious means, some perhaps out of what they think is a good idea, are condemning the country to forget the good things and the bad about the past. You need to know both. And there are good things. We're going to talk about Joe Biden's vacation home in just a minute and some of the things they're doing. Let me just skip down a little bit more. In March, the Texas Rangers baseball team announced on social media the return to public view. I think we talked about this at the time. Of a, quote, one riot, one ranger statue at the ballpark. That's the Texas Rangers ballpark. The 12-foot bronze sculpture of a Texas Ranger had been removed from Dallas Love Field Airport in 2020 after claims that the officer who served as the model for the statue sided with opponents to desegregation of a public high school in 1956. The ball club said when the statue was announced, "The Texas Rangers have long occupied a revered place in Texas history, dating to the creation of the organization over 200 years ago," unquote. Now, to me, that's crazy. The fact that you would remove the statue, not because of the Texas Rangers, but because, supposedly, the guy serving as the model for the man in the statue had some bad connections. That's pretty crazy. Maybe I'm old-fashioned. And we already talked about Columbus. And by the way, Columbus is the fastest growing big city, I guess, in Ohio. And it was named in the 1800s by a local politician who admired the explorer. And the city's emblem and its flag displayed the Santa Maria, Columbus's flagship, which led to the transatlantic voyage of 1492. All right, so there's a very good article. It's a rather lengthy one in the Wall Street Journal. That's where this came from. By Cameron McWhorter, June 3rd. And as of this morning, it was still available. So if you like that article, you can get a copy of it from the Wall Street Journal. Well, gosh, the time is really flying. And I've got a couple of things about Nantucket. Out of the great state of Massachusetts, as most of you know, it's an island off the coast. Never been there. I grew up in the north side of Boston, and Nantucket is to the south of Massachusetts, south of Cape Cod. Never made it there. But we have two articles here, one local, one national. I'll take a quick look at the national one first. This is in Fox News, June 8th, by Ashley J. Di Mella. Church cans patriotic staple on Biden's posh vacation enclave. Pastor says tradition, quote, doesn't cut it, unquote. A Nantucket pastor is defending her church's decision to cancel its annual 4th of July reading of America's founding documents, using her sermon to explain why the long-running tradition was axed on the exclusive Massachusetts island favored by former President Joe Biden. Reverend Aaron Splain of the Second Congregational Meeting House Society said in a sermon excerpt she provided to Fox News Digital, quote, "For 2.5 centuries, why are our founding documents still celebrated as mainly aspirational? 250 years later, aspirational, that is, not being there yet, celebrating the promise of those documents in our country just doesn't cut it." Well, the historic Nantucket Unitarian Meeting House has hosted a public reading of the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights in downtown Nantucket each 4th of July holiday for the past 25 years before the church decided to cancel it in May, and part of an ongoing effort to understand its, quote, own whiteness, unquote. The sermon continued, quote, "What should unify all of us is not to continue to assume or hide behind aspirational only, but to commit to the work of change, to be brave enough to be uncomfortable, unsettled, unaccepting of an incomplete narrative," unquote. The decision to cancel the annual reading was announced in a letter published by the Nantucket Current. Yes, that must be the local newspaper, which discussed ongoing conversations within the congregation about race, privilege, and the historical application of constitutional rights. Now, isn't that interesting? This is Lou speaking now. They're talking about the application of constitutional rights, and yet they're not going to read the Bill of Rights, which is the very great summary of the rights of American citizens. Seems to be a little contradiction there. But getting back to the article, the cancellation sparked a wave of social media backlash, with critics arguing the decision reflected broader discomfort on the left with traditional celebrations of America's founding. Blatter stated that Spain would not, quote, engage, unquote, with anyone concerned with this cancellation on social media, saying those concerned could make an appointment to speak with her. Social media, this is her statement in a letter. Social media is not the place for important, tender conversations, unquote. Fox News Digital reached out to Spillane for comment last week after then Nantucket Current published a letter announcing the event was canceled. And she responded, while a few people have taken up the invitation to connect, the overwhelming majority who disagree have not. It is disappointing because there is so much to talk about and absolutely no worth in yelling at each other, Lane told Fox News Digital. And I'll stop there because I want to get to the other article that no doubt overlaps to some extent. The other article was entitled Church Cites, quote, our own whiteness, unquote, in canceling 4th of July readings. This is from the Boston Herald, May 31st. A little more than a week ago. A church in Nantucket, and this, by the way, is by Lance Reynolds. A church in Nantucket says it won't host its 4th of July readings of the Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights as America celebrates its 250th anniversary because of, quote, our own whiteness, unquote. Division has sprouted in the quaint Massachusetts Island community after the Nantucket Unitarian Universalists announced that it wouldn't be holding its annual holiday readings. The Nantucket Unitarian Universalists, which says it puts its faith, quote, into action to social justice work, unquote, is pointing directly to the Supreme Court's ruling that electoral map-making map makers rely too heavily on racial demographics to hit specific minority representation targets. And I'm going to skip down. Other 4th of July celebrations have also been canceled elsewhere in Massachusetts. But unlike municipal financial constraints in Rutland, Framingham, and Northampton, the Nantucket Church's postponement is purely political. Nantucket's town county government is still scheduled to hold its Independence Day festivities with a fireworks display capping off the day-long celebration. And this is Blue speaking. That's good news. They're not all as woke as this one church. And the Nantucket Current posted on its Facebook page on Friday that St. Paul's Church, which I believe that the other article mentioned was Episcopal, has responded to the Unitarian Universalist stance by deciding to host its own reading of the Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights. Reverend Max Wolfe told the news outlet, quote, those documents are aspiration. We may not be there yet, but we thought it was important to gather together and try to live up to the promises our country has made. Letters to the outlet, residents have expressed disappointment in the Unitarian Universalist cancellation, calling it a missed opportunity. And here's a quote from resident Charlie Chasen. He wrote, quote, there are many conversations that can be had about the Trump administration, the Supreme Court, Congress, wokeness, slavery, etc. But those are not appropriate reasons to cancel cancel a celebration for the founding of this great country. And let's see now, anything else? I guess that is pretty much all that was there that wasn't in the other article. Again, that was in the Boston Herald on May 31st. Well, like I say, if you don't want to read the Bill of Rights, does that mean you don't agree with the Bill of Rights? Or you're just pouting because you don't get your way? I don't know. Personally, I think it's very important for every American to know what the Declaration of Independence says. And yes, it took a long time to free the slaves. But it was within the documents from the Founding Fathers that the slaves were free. They amended the Constitution. It took a war to do it. But the Constitution was amended with the 13th Amendment outlawing slavery. Why could they do that? Because the Founding Fathers long before had arranged in the original Constitution to allow amendments to be made to update the Constitution. Now, some people want to scrap the Constitution. Thankfully, not many. Some would like to start all over again. And goodness knows what might pop up then. I think it might have been Winston Churchill said the U.S. Constitution was one of the noblest creations of the mind of man. I'll have to look up the exact quote sometime. Not sure it was Churchill that said that, but some English statesman, I believe, said it. And it could have been Churchill. Well, enough of that. One or two other things that I wanted to point out. Let's see. Here's something from the Gateway Pundit. Once again, I'll give you my address. Oh, we may run out of time. If you'd like to write to me, and you're welcome to write, saying your opinions, if you'd like to send me some clippings. Many people have done that. I got this clipping from the Boston Herald because a very good listener, Joe, up in Massachusetts, has been very faithful in sending me all kinds of excellent clippings. He's a true patriot, a great guy, and I thank him. I want to thank him in the air for all he does. Don't get enough time to thank him in writing every week, like I should, but I'll say right here for everybody to hear. Thank you, Joe, for all you do. And now here's something that appeared in the Gateway Pundit by Antonio Graceffo. I hope I'm saying his name right. G-R-A-C-E-F-F-O. June 8th. Now, I lost my train of thought. I was going to give my address again. Lou Caverly. You spell that last name C-A- V as in Victor, E-R-L-Y. It's Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem. Spelled just the way you spell it in the Bible. B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland. And the zip is 21609. And I try to respond to those who write. I'm a little behind times. I had some good gifts, and if you can give a little financial contribution to help keep the program on the air, it would be greatly appreciated. I have several very loyal listeners who I couldn't do the program without their help. So thank you to them, too. And thank you to any of you who can put a little money in an envelope, a few stamps. Elizabeth always liked to say, we can always use stamps. Well, we always can, because I try to write people. And stamps are getting expensive. I sent a gift to my brother-in-law, and I couldn't believe one of these flat-rate large boxes was $32 for the postage. Next time, because it's only in Pennsylvania, I will send it in a plain box. I think it would be a good deal cheaper. But I guess the price is just to keep going up, like everything else. So write to me if you'd like to. You don't have to send any money. Just send a note. Say what you think. Say your opinions. Send clippings, that you think are apropos, than newsletters, than anything you'd like. I like it all, and I love to hear from those of you who are listening. And if you think of it, tell me how you're listening. Are you listening on shortwave, the computer, or what other means are you using to listen? Now, this one for the Gateway Pundit is entitled "The Bible, Science, and Other Sources of Uncountable Truth Are Now Crimes in Canada and the UK." Now, let me preface this by saying the reason they are not crimes in the U.S. is because the Founding Fathers, the sometimes besmirched Founding Fathers, Washington, Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, the other great men, James Madison, who largely wrote the U.S. Constitution, and all the other great men of the Revolution and the period just after the Constitution was devised, they put in the Constitution the freedoms in the Bill of Rights that prevent this kind of censorship from taking place in the USA. All right, now, again from the Gateway Pundit, Canada's new bill to restrict hate speech would remove protections for the Bible, meaning that posting or carrying a placard quoting Leviticus or other scriptures condemning LGBTQ behavior, or possibly even claiming that there are only two genders, could be considered hate speech, a jailable offense. And since the existence of only two genders, and the fact that a baby is a living, breathing, human life inside the mother's womb, are scientific facts, ostensibly citing scientific textbooks, could also be jailable if those facts hurt someone's feelings. Well, I believe our music is coming on. We had a little late start today, but I think I'm going to have to wrap this one up. I'll probably talk about this next week. But again, treasure the freedoms we have in this country, because not all countries, even some of the ones that were once noted for freedoms, I no longer have those freedoms. Thank you for listening. You're listening to The Divided Kingdom, and I ask you to tune in again next week. Thanks again, and good night.